Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday, and it's Life in the Labyrinth again. We've finally made it to Chapter 4. When I started this whole adventure with the book Life in the Labyrinth by E.J. Gold, I was convinced we'd be able to cover one or two chapters per evening.
Don't know about this one. Chapter 4 seems pretty intense.
And Chapter 3 stumbled me. And it took us 2 weeks to get through that one. But so we've crawled our way all the way to Chapter 4, and so that's what we're going to tackle tonight. There are two postings on the website. The website is wingsofchaos.com, Life in the Labyrinth, and they're very strong. One of them I'll be reading as we get into it a little bit, M.A., and it's very illustrative of the some of the specific points that EJ is talking about in this chapter. So that's a great example for us to go forward. And
who wrote that one?
Who wrote the book?
No, the
book was by EJ Gold.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
No, not the posting on Wings of Chaos.
Harry.
Oh.
Lundell, and
okay.
Then it was answered by Susan.
Okay.
And I have both of them printed now. We'll be working with that in a little while, too. But in the meantime, do you want us to get us started then on the header of the chapter?
Certainly. Chapter 4, The Keys to Elegant Voyaging. The keys to elegant labyrinth voyaging are generally those little, nagging, insignificant items which we would ordinarily dismiss as inconsequential. One such key is the rudder with which we steer ourselves through the labyrinth.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, did anybody pick up that concept of the rudder? Did it hit you what that might mean for you? Okay, but it didn't. But if it did, I'd be interested to know if you had a comment on that specific phrase, the rudder with which we steer ourselves through the labyrinth.
And David, I came on tonight hoping you would tell me what it was.
Okay, well, we'll get into that. And I think that we do have clues in the chapter here about how to define what the rudder of navigation might be. Okay? So without further ado, why don't we jump into it? It is a meaty chapter, and we'll do our best. We'll just do our best, okay? Anyway, voyaging depends strongly upon learning to recognize releasing, opening, and unlocking and triggering combinations. A combination in this sense can be an object, word, posture, phrase, sound, movement, gesture, even a joke or a pun. Virtually any mechanism of sound, sight, smell, motion, or thought, which creates an access point or opening which would otherwise be closed. So I'm going to point out again, we are far away from where we were in HBM and in practical work on self. We've extended ourselves way beyond that. We're no longer dealing just with the mechanism of the machine itself, but now we're saying, okay, we've gone beyond that, and we have a sense that we can voyage. We are voyaging. Now, in my opinion, EJ is doing almost the impossible, and he can't do it perfectly. It's impossible to do. But he's creating pointers about the non-phenomenal world.
Wait, say my puppy.
Hello? Okay. So, which creates an access point. So in order to even get to that point, we have to have a sense of what is an access point. When does an access point occur? And to understand that, we have to develop our sensing mechanism. In the past, we were developing our sensing mechanism to understand, in a sense, when the machine is doing something or when the machine starts to wake up. Now, we're even to the next level. We're saying, ah, something's there. Let me go investigate it. Let me go grab it and find out. I had an experience. Somebody said something to me about a week ago, and they made a comment that on the surface seemed very mundane. And I answered, I said, yeah, that was good. Then about a couple of days later, I saw them, and they asked this exact same question. And when they asked it, it gave me pause, you know? Mm-hmm. It gave me pause because I knew there was more there. Because the literal sense of it was almost meaningless. It was what was hidden there that was important. That's what I mean by sensing the access point. And I did, and it turned out I was right. I mean, there's no way I could have known that in a literal sense, but we can know it if we're looking and we're using an eyesight that comes from a different mechanism. Okay? So, concept is sensing the access point. And we don't know what will the key to the access point will be. Combinations are commonly found in games, puzzle games, computer games. And with the right combinations, you open doors, paths through walls. If you've done computer games, and many of us here have, you know how that works. You push this rock, you kill that monster, leap upon this cube, and the door opens and you can get through. It's the same type of thing. That if you don't do it sometimes exactly in the right order, the door doesn't open. I guarantee you that's the case. And we'll get some huge clues as we go ahead. But now that I think about it, there's an enormous clue. And we can easily execute a lateral transition from one chamber to another using a precision sequence of dance-like movements. Hopefully they'll be graceful. But that will come in time. As with anything that we learn, it's the practice that gives it its elegance. And that's what we're really talking about here, right? Most of the really important keys will be used to voyage in the labyrinth are those which are casually dismissed in the primate view as insignificant, trivial, ridiculous, humiliating, and of course they go consistently unnoticed. And so we're really talking about opening our eyes in a different manner. And that's what this chapter is about. It's trying to give us clues that point to something that you cannot describe in a linear manner, that you cannot describe in a linear manner. Okay? Aside from environmentally prompted keys we might find lying abundantly around, we can also take our clues from inside, suggesting perhaps that we follow instinct, responsive, but not reflexively so, to a wider domain of possible attention points. So what's one methodology that we use? We sense our inner life, and that we see, what is my inner life like at this moment? That in itself is the beginning of a clue set. All right? So I'm saying a clue set. Now the next paragraph, we're going to stop on that first sentence. Once we have intuited our clues to passing through the boundaries from chamber to chamber, we may use them. What the heck does he mean by that? M.A.? Once we have intuited our clues.
Well, two things come up for me. Intuited is... our clues. You read it like that, intuitive, our clues. Kind of goes back to your clue set. We're looking for clues, so we're looking for that clue set. If you say intuitive, our clues, and you're putting emphasis on our, then continuously he's talking about doing things in a group, as a group in this particular.
That's a great point and a great distinction, and I wasn't making that.
Mm-hmm.
I was referring at this point just to our specific clues. And so I ask, and maybe I'll put you on the spot a little bit, you know, have you developed clues that you can call on, that you kind of sense that you are, as it's indicated here, to passing through the boundaries from chamber to chamber?
Well, somewhere in the back of what we already read, it said chambers have sensory data. So they have sights, they can have sights, sounds, things happening there, kind of like a frozen, also it was mentioned as a frozen tableau.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes me right back to self-observation. And I think that that's the encompassing words that I would use.
Absolutely.
For the minuscule things I'd be checking out.
So each of us have a, as I've said, a signature. There's something that will appeal, that will affect you, that is that clue. For instance, it might be a change in the color spectrum. The color might get warmer for you. If you've been down the road and you practice, the color might get warmer. And at that moment, that's a clue that something's available. Okay? Molly, is anybody commenting on that point? So Aria is making the point that when she's about to cross, there are clues at that moment. That's a good point. That's
mm-hmm.
the moment of transit.
Mm-hmm. What was that question?
The dose have a question that says, what? Is she asking that? Are they asking that of Aria? Yes, it is the non-phenomenal world. And yes, what I was talking about is the non-phenomenal world.
That we can practice in the phenomenal world.
Yeah. It's pointing to the non-phenomenal world.
But we're practicing to do that in the phenomenal world.
Because we're still in the body.
Mm-hmm.
We're still in the... Oh, I see.
Could have been.
No, I think that might have been Lupe.
But that's the point. You know, that's the
yeah.
point that we're talking about in this chapter as well.
Is what?
The continual practice.
Yes.
While we're in this body, do something in the non-phenomenal world.
While we're here.
While we're here.
This is the part. This is the part that. Teammates, where it gets fun. This is the fun stuff. This is the stuff we'll write home about. So we have to find our own, intuit our own clues, and that particular sentence goes on, and if they prove to be the right combination, we find ourselves sailing off once again out the chamber door and through the labyrinth, zigzagging wildly toward our new destination and taking advantage of the karmic wind that ordinarily would propel us downward to our just reward. So basically what that's saying, the karmic wind is like, oh, be careful here. You might have traps that pull you back into the machine. So We're talking a bit of theory. This is theoretical, but it is each one of us, and we're going to have a great example in a few minutes, okay? Great example. Jumping ahead, every once in a while it might occur to us to do something slightly eccentric. This could produce lateral transition. It could also produce a lot of other things and isn't recommended for the unschooled voyager. When you've gotten along and there's a sense of in this practice and there's a sense of a bit of confidence, you might try something really unusual. But it's a delicate move to do that. It's a delicate move to know when to do it, and we'll discuss that in more detail. I just wrote, that's kind of a little bit of an advanced step or intermediate step, okay?
It's good to know. We're getting a lot of information in this chapter. I mean, there's directions and all kinds of things that we could start to look at for things that we could do. Going sideways, going down, going up, that kind of thing. But if we practice and go through all the possibilities, or maybe most of the possibilities, with guidance from EJ, you know, through this book, then perhaps we won't do anything really too eccentric. We'll stick with what we're supposed to do in our pack of green.
It's an interesting thing, what you're saying there, because no matter what it is you're setting out to practice, there are hundreds of books, for instance, on juggling. You can read the book, and it's very straightforward. You just toss a ball in the air, and while that one's in the air, you toss this one in the air, and then as that one's in the air, you toss the third one in the air, until you just, pretty straightforward, right?
I've read the juggling book.
But after you juggle for until you've actually put the balls in your hand, it's literally impossible to understand it. So Simon had a question, and what is it, Molly? And the trap? We'll get to that. Simon wants to know about an example of the traps. We're going to get to that in a couple of minutes, in about 5 minutes or so. And I think it might exemplify something here. So just rushing ahead here, not too fast.
Not too fast.
Because there really is a lot of data here. Attitude, mood, mental set, posture, tempo, time, place, people, or reasonable macro-dimensional facsimile thereof. All these factors combined produce the launching pad of probability for dimensional hopping. I've brought this example up before. We were having dinner, this is many years ago, where the kitchen is now used to be the dining room. Mm. And where the dining room is now was the actual kitchen. And do you remember that, Molly? Yeah, long, 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 long time ago. And we were sitting there having dinner, and it was an invocational dinner. It was already hot. The space was already hot. And at one moment, I sniffed something. And I looked up, and at that same moment, Barbara and EJ looked up too. And there was a recognition that there was a, as it says right here, the probability for dimensional hopping. We didn't take that moment, but we recognized it. Everybody, those three individuals recognized it at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
How can I describe that for me, that whole set of perception I sniffed it, but it's a different kind of smelling than you would get if you go to the alchemical, Kelly's alchemical gold. Is it alchemical gold?
Mm-hmm.
Her website, the perfumery, which is another complexity, but it was distinct for me. I knew it was there. and I acted on it. And then I got verification from others. It was more of a sensation, I would say a vibratory change that took place, and I located it near my nose, my nostrils. But it was instead of being a flavor of a smell, it was more a change in vibratory sensation. Does this make sense?
Well, now that you say that, if I have that experience, maybe I'll remember that.
You might have that same sort of thing.
Yeah. A vibratory sensation near the nostrils instead
of... It was vibratory in nature, not chemical in nature.
Yeah.
It wasn't like... Okay, so let's go to the next paragraph. Okay, and we're going very slowly here. We need, most of all, the spirit of risk, adventure, the daring to experiment. Naturally, once in a while, in the spirit of adventure, we might make a little mistake. Now, I actually wrote, I circled this spirit of risk, and I wrote down a couple of names, and I was wondering, has anybody had this concept? This,
what were the names? Like names of people you know, or
yeah,
names? Okay. That you were thinking that don't have a sense of risk?
No, that have actually taken a sense. That the sense of risk is the clue for them.
Okay.
It's the clue for them. I'm wondering if anybody understands that as a clue for themselves. Clue. Okay, and if it's last word, it says, yeah, maybe, in the subtle, in that neighborhood.
Here.
Is Susan there?
Yeah, it's me.
It's one of the names I wrote down.
It's me.
Yes. Would you like to share a little bit?
Well, I guess... The risk, even the risk of talking now, brings a heightened sense of energy.
Yeah.
And then you can also take the clues of the blood pressure, of the color in the room, of different feelings, so you get the clue that you're onto something.
You might want to note not only the color in the room, but the tone of the color, soft, warm, hot, those kinds of tonalities. And note those now, and then tomorrow, when that space isn't there, come back and compare. The same physical phenomena, but it's a different room.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Aria's on tonight, I guess, or Hawk Lady. They're all there? Oh. What are they saying? What is... Okay. Okay. So this sense of risk, it's actually, if you get into it in some detail, the concept of the sense of risk is a sense of risk of the machine. That's that fear that, in a sense, I have every night before the class of coming here, going, oh, no. And, you know, it's all the same things. I'm too tired. what am I going to talk about? I don't understand this stuff either. It's just going to get boring. They're going to be bored. And then I show up, and so there's that transit. Mm-hmm. And it's the machine cycling through its stuff until it wakes up. And do we remember the definition? Is Silverdale still on the phone?
Yes.
Can you remind us of what the definition or some of the elements of the machine waking up are?
Well, the direction that I'm working in, just on theory and attempts to verify this for myself, is that our essential self is identified as an inner vibrational sensation, vibratory sensation, and the greater the effort, a large part of my effort is directed toward attempting to saturate the whole physical body with that vibratory sensation. And if I am successful in doing that, then I regard my machine to be awake. And so now, as we go through this chapter regarding the Voyager, my perception is that vibratory sensation, which is really vibrating in a atmosphere or an environment of light, an infinite extension, begins to differentiate different types of vibratory sensations in accordance with its own awareness of its own vibratory sensation, and then attempts to communicate that. Hopefully one hand washes the other. The physical body, as it begins to wake up to a recognition of this effort of the essential self to educate and grow and mature, the vibratory sensation informs you about your environment, people in the room, danger in the environment, opportunities in the environment, and communicates this to the historical personality, which is otherwise very limited to all of these environment or locational clues. So, that's my view.
And when the vibratory sensation of the essential self starts to put its footprint out, so to speak,
emerge,
and it starts to emerge, the will of the machine declines. The will of the machine is no longer powerful.
Absolutely.
And it's this phenomena that is part of this lever that we can use on this spirit of risk. We risk that, giving up that ego, the sensation of existence in a sense, and we go ahead.
And Dave, along those lines, my perception is that as the essential self grows and becomes increasingly the center of gravity, then actually the machine just kind of stops reacting to anything and everything, in the same way that our machine is so busy doing things now that we never really pay any attention to our essential self. So there might initially be resistance as the machine is waking up, but boy, once it's awake, it doesn't do a damn thing.
That's correct, and that's my point. We have to get, that's part of the barrier we have to go through. And this is why, for all of the books that we've gone over to in the last few years, for me, the concept of transit is so important. Allowing yourself to transit from one space to another space. When I was, as you know, I work as a CPA, and kind of very busy time of year for me now. And I was in the middle of a very engaging client work. And usually on Wednesdays for me at this in West Coast time at 4:30, I stop doing whatever I do and I get back into this material. So I picked up the book. It was 4:30. I got up from my desk, went into my library. I start reading, and my brain was just chattering internally about this project. that I've been thinking of. I couldn't stop it. So I stood up. I have a little, I'm a very poor musician, but I picked up Native American flute. And I picked it up and I just kind of walked around the house playing it badly, out of tune. But by the time, you know, like for 5 minutes, and I sat down and I could get back into the space.
You had to have an interim.
So I needed, in a sense, a physical transit
mm-hmm.
to get into this space that we're working in now.
Mm-hmm.
So I used that tool.
You actually had to die to the other space.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't carry that around and
do this.
And do this as well. So you really had to put that one away.
So jumping ahead a couple of paragraphs. If we haven't already gotten ourselves killed or mangled with all our clever macro-dimensional bungling, which can happen, when we smell the toast burning, we will intuitively remember our previous mistakes, quickly stop everything, check our position, take rapid stock of the situation, sniff the air, and if we detect an odor of sulfur dioxide, methane, ammonia, perhaps take an alternate route. Okay. So I underline this in red, remembering our previous mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I get phone calls from people, so they all have something to share. But I'm just going to read something that Harry wrote. Without remembering, we are condemned to repeat our mistakes forever. For this kind of remembering, we must develop something that actually it's about a page away, I think. But it incorporates this. For this kind of remembering, you must develop something that survives the death of the machine, something which is called, in our technical language, understanding. Okay? Not knowledge, understanding. And then he goes on. Sometimes this understanding comes from our experience of chambers that are sweetness and light, leaving us in a state of calm, that is calm, expanded, serene. And sometimes it comes from experiencing the reality of a tree by being hit in the face with a branch that we did not see coming. Usually our friends tell us things that we like to hear, whereas friends who are not our friends are more comfortable speaking their minds, telling us things about ourselves we may not like at all. Such an individual said such a thing to me 2 days ago. Since it was my want to talk about experience, when I have really something to say, I will share briefly what transpired. What this individual said had been bluntly stated and had been rattling around in my head, giving me no peace of mind, even making it difficult to enter my sacred space prayer. My machine ego wanted to tell this person where to shove his comment. We're for you. We're with you there, Harry. Finally, I decided to just sit with the problem, and suddenly it occurred that the only way to dissolve this negative state was to take it into my sacred space and forgive him by recognizing the value in what he had said. Hell, it's hard to argue when someone tells you the truth. When I did this, my essential state immediately grew. My morphological present instantly expanded, and for the first time in 2 days, I experienced some peace. It was as if there was an essential state that could absorb all other states and yet retain its identity. Beautifully put. That's a great phrase. Yet somehow more solid. Yet with the same center of gravity, it's hard to explain. Have any of you had such a similar experience? And if so, what was it, or is it, congruent with your experience of voyaging? Susan goes on and comments, I think it is beautiful that you were eventually able to expand your state and able to see things differently. I can identify with being in a state where I'm stuck in a loop. Once I get stuck, it gets hard to separate what out is real. When others project their truth about you onto you, you have to figure out what they are trying to convey and separate it from the mean words or delivery. I can feel your being lighten up as you expand your field. Thanks for sharing the story. It helps me remember the bigger story and realize even when I'm stuck, I can choose to expand my energy. As far as being congruent with voyaging, I think experience like this show us how to be elegant voyagers, and our willingness to be open to expand our state depends how graceful we can be. Mm. Two great comments.
Two great comments, really.
So we understand then this idea. We begin to understand remembering our previous mistakes. Now, I've been in the heat of that moment that Harry's talking about, and I certainly have a lot of reactivity around stuff. But that's when the opportunity is, too. That's when the energy is intense. You can take the energy, and you can move with the energy, or you can resist the energy. You resist the energy, you're stuck. In a sense, that is a clue point right there. But I guarantee you that because Harry shared this with this group, and I mean that very specifically, because he shared it, it's a form of essential, what I call essential confession, that because he shared it with this group, he has noted how that mechanism works. It will happen again to him, but I guarantee you he has more knowledge going into that than he...
I want to congratulate him for being responsive and not reflexive.
Correct.
Not lashing out, not going, you know, telling that guy where to...
Berserker, yeah.
Yeah, but he was responsive. The point that he carried around with him for, you know, it took him a while to figure out what to do about it, but he carried it with him. He didn't buffer it. He didn't go to the bar, you know, lots of things that people would do.
Good idea, though.
Get rid of that kind of negative energy. But he didn't do any of that. You know, he took it to his reading altar, which I think is fabulous.
Huge. So, and because in the reading space, in his sacred space, there's an other energy that in a certain way you can't do anything but be in that essential place. So this was a great example of beginning to recognize a mechanism of mistake. Okay? So if you have a chance, go ahead and post other examples that you might have. This is a very potent one and a great response from Susan, so thank you both.
I think these are the kind of essential things that happen to people, though. I mean, this is an essential thing for Harry. And Susan was relating something that happened for her essence also. We all have these experiences that actually change how we will voyage. I mean, this is what we're practicing.
This is what we're practicing.
We have to intentionally sometimes put ourselves into these exercises because the exercises may not come to us. You know, somebody might not tell us off in our lifetime. Maybe they won't tell us that kind of thing. We won't have some sort of background for an experience such as that. I'm not saying that particular one, but maybe there's a certain set of experiences that touch different points of us, and all of those have to be touched in order to be as prepared as we can to voyage elegantly.
when you get stuck, maybe the point is if you don't know what to do or how to do, but you know that you're stuck. So, and this gets back to Spinoza in his book, on book 5 of the Ethics, and he says that once you are involved in an infirmity, as he calls it, a confusion, there's nothing in the confusion that can get you out of it. It's you're locked in it in a sense. But if you know that you have that infirmity, maybe you can bring a tool in with you next time.
Exactly. Yeah, that's great too. You know that you have the infirmity because you've experienced this, and you can bring a tool in with you next time.
And so
that's great.
And one way to develop those tools is to ask your fellow voyagers. Every time I go to the store, I get confused when they start to give me change. I don't know what to do. I just can't count change. What do I do? And you can ask for help. And this is developing specific ways and means to unravel your particular box of experiences.
If anybody's played Diablo, how about dropping a nice shield at the first waypoint for somebody, you know? Doing something like that.
Yeah.
Having somebody give you a piece of armor or a fighting weapon or something.
As a tool.
As a tool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this environment that we're in now, if you have, ask each other. I know that many individuals, like in Southern California, there's a group, ask each other. But at that point, the interest in developing your essential self, as Silverdale was telling us, that vibratory body has to be greater than the humility of how your particular machine works.
I think it's allegorical as well as
what do you mean?
The practical side. I mean, you know, we're looking at so many levels right here. You know, this chapter is covering many different levels. We're taking it on a phenomenal and non-phenomenal
both
track at the same
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
So.
So, Molly, anything? So Piff is telling us that in this lifetime, she remembers being dying from the same weaknesses, in a loop of dying from the same illnesses and weaknesses, and taking care of them in this life is making a difference. So she had to wake up to the fact that she was even in a loop. That's huge. That's huge to even understand, instead of just blithely going through and then you become cannon fodder for, you know, whatever. So that's enormous. And once you, in a sense, have identified the problem, you have a chance to do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And your creative being can come forth. And for her, one tool was dreams and what she would see there as a certain tool to give her hints about different things. So that's a good... I'm jumping ahead one page to page 28. The top paragraph, remembering what we did 3 or 4 games ago, perhaps even in a different game, or 3 or 4 lifetimes ago is another important subject, aspect of successful voyaging. Noticing what your tendencies are. No amount of luck will be useful if we do not remember what we did. Without remembering, we are condemned to repeat our mistakes forever. And this is Harry's quote. But this is not the sort of remembering for which we depend upon the mind, the linear mind, or any other function that which rightfully belongs with and performs its own one-way swan song in a syncopated duet with the human biological machine. So how do we remember? Like, Piff, how did it come about that you remembered that cycle? And this is actually, in the last 2 years or so, this a similar thing that Harry brought up, I don't know when it was, maybe it was HBM a long time ago, when someone said something about his mustache at the time, his proud mustache. Ganjo. Some of them are very subtle and not very pleasing. For this kind of remembering, we must develop something which survives the death of the machine, something which is called, in our technical language, understanding, a semi-intuitional recall, a sixth sense, which comes from unprocessed knowledge, which tells us that something is wrong, even if we don't know exactly what. So it's that semi-intuitional recall, that sixth sense that I'm talking about when you sniff something. You sniff something in the space. That's, we all have that. That's what we need to practice and develop more and more for ourselves. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
M.A.?
Mm-hmm. Sure does.
Yeah. So, for instance, with Piff and with Harry, in those examples, they came to an understanding of something. But by coming to that understanding, they had the possibility of moving beyond it. And guess what? They did.
I think the understanding is an essence change. I really think it gets into that level. It has to survive the death of the machine. So it really has to get into the essence level to really get it. To really rock it, if that's a term that people still use, but to get it into the very core, has to be a real change.
What is the what's the quatrain? Again, do you remember the quatrain? Something about all phenomena is illusion.
All phenomena is illusion. Neither attractive nor repelled. Not making any sudden moves. My habits will carry me through.
What habits? That's what we're talking about
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is these voyaging habits. When you get into certain things, and I know virtually everybody that's online, everybody has certain habits that they fall into. Some individuals recognize them and speak to them, which starts to, in this form of confession that I'm talking about, starts to take the wind out of the sails of those things, because they become an object. They don't become us anymore. They become an object of the machine, which is a external to the essential self, as Silverdale was saying, this vibratory body, this ocean that he's trying to imbue the whole machine with as the new leader, the master is coming home. So that's we're beginning to see what understanding might be.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start to live not from our formatory linear brain, but we live from a different world. And that different world is electrical and vibratory in nature. Very important. Very important. So where are we?
Are we there? No ordinary way of approaching life.
Yeah. Go ahead and read that paragraph.
No ordinary way of approaching life can determine how we are to view things in the labyrinth. what their ultimate utility or function will be, what dangers are set before us. No fixed set of rules will apply to every voyage. The only thing we can predict is that even when we seem able to guess what tomorrow will bring, the truth is that everything is always totally unpredictable, and it's just the statistical distribution of probability that makes it look as if it isn't.
Yeah. It depends on what eyes you're looking through. If you're looking through the linear eyes of the human biological machine, you fall under the trap of it's always the same. But it doesn't take much evidence to see of the risks of life. You know, we have a very dear friend, a young man, who fell victim, though he looks like he's on the mend, to colon cancer. Young, strong, powerful young man with great habits. His eating habits were pristine. He was physically active. And boom.
And when somebody says you're on the mend from colon cancer, you'll know how strange that is, because it's a very high predictability. Not making it.
And his life.
He's making it.
because of his personal physical strength and abilities. But my goodness. Boom. So where's the predictability in that? And on it goes. And on, you all know that story. So the facade of predictability that surrounds us is nothing more than just that. And you walk out the door, know that you're walking out into a different space. As soon as I walk out from that door, I know I'm in a different space. And as Silverdale said earlier, once you're in that space where the essential self is available and your perceptions see the vibrancy and the richness of that space, that's where you want to be. That's where your interest then lies. But more is asked of you at that time. More is asked of you, and more is put on you. Who was the one that fought with the angel in the Bible?
Jacob
fought with the angel. Jacob, exactly right. So,
it's amazing what she knows.
Jacob fought with the angel. Now, the angel came down, was unknown, was in the nighttime, and Jacob struggles with this angel, fight back and forth. At one point, the angel touches his inner thigh, and he goes down. It was as if the angel was saying, that's how powerful I am. But he didn't use that level of power against Jacob. But he demonstrated to him. And then as that goes on, he says, what is your name? As if he suddenly didn't know who it was, the angel saying that, who is it that I'm fighting? Because he wasn't in the linear world. And at the end of it, Jacob was not defeated, and he changed his name and called him something else. Do you remember that?
Israel.
And he was called Israel. And he was called Israel and went forth. No, the angel said, what is your name?
He said Jacob.
No, Jacob was just shaken.
Well,
yeah. He was fighting, but he wasn't defeated is the point. So this, in a sense, this infinite power came forth upon him. And after he succeeded and the sun came up in the morning, your name will now be Israel.
That's the
angel. To Jacob. They fought tonight in battle. So in a certain way, we are never given, we're never given more of a challenge than we are able to handle. and all of you intuitional types that are out there right now, and you sense these higher spaces, you sense them because you are able to go there. You're able to go there, and something's holding you back. And what's holding you back is you. But it's the machine that comes in. You can't even see these things. It says here, the spirit of risk is what helps us go into the next level. We don't even know the sense of freedom that might be available. We don't think that we're not free. And that's the biggest burden upon us. We already think we're free. Hey, I'm the guy you're talking to. I know who I am. What my father said when I was 19 and I started understanding this stuff a little bit. Know thyself. What do you mean? I know myself. Here I am. So now we move forward into this whole other land. This is undiscovered country. And we're looking for ways to do it. And I made a comment here. I said that EJ is trying to describe something that's almost impossible to describe to the machine. But nevertheless, that's what this is. And working on this book together allows us a chance to uncover little bits and pieces of it.
Mm-hmm.
Any other comments here that... I'll get the log user, but it's...
Yeah.
Go ahead and read something. Okay, and so Pip says that the waking state does become a habit of the machine, and that's the beginnings of stabilization, which we talked about a couple of chapters ago. The euphoria of it will ramp down, Molly is telling. Yeah, but she's right, is that... But then when the honeymoon is over, the work can begin. Yeah, another great point, not collapsing the voyage into the familiar. Well, that's who? That's Tianja, okay. And Pip are both strong on that point. Well, once again, I was not able to get through an entire chapter,
mm-hmm.
and
I
don't know
the
problem here, but we have like 3 pages left.
Yeah.
That's a long way left.
Yeah.
As I look now, I realize, my goodness. Yeah, we resist, and Pip is saying that when we resist what?
We resist ourselves.
We resist ourselves. Ultimately, we're here because we want to work, and the work begins to happen in this forum of understanding when we are in the labyrinthine movements that we're talking about here. That becomes the fabric of understanding that we draw upon and we grow upon, and then we have something to share with our fellow voyagers.
Well, we're working on a set of clues, so
we are working.
Our understanding comes with our set of clues.
Did we get to some sets of clues today?
I think
we've
got a few.
Got a couple out there. Silverdale, mm-hmm. did we get to any clues whatsoever yet?
I think we're making progress slowly.
Very slowly, and that's all we can do here because this is undiscovered country. And when Hume wrote that book, she was really talking about her external relationship with Gurdjieff,
yeah.
that she wrote in the 60s, but my goodness, she pointed to spaces that they must have gone into.
Yeah.
There's no question.
Yeah.
And that's what we're talking about here. And there's this strange sense of understanding that occurs. And it's vibratory in nature,
yeah.
and it isn't necessarily translatable into the mundane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hold up your hand. No, don't clap.
No.
Relax.
Okay.
Okay, relax.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Feel that?
Yeah.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Getting hot.
What we were doing for the tape is I asked Emma to put her palm up, and she started to do like a high five, but then we relaxed into it, and she said, "It's getting hot." That's a form of understanding, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can feel that there's an understanding there.
Yeah.
It passes through. That's what I'm talking about in terms of when we get into these spaces, that might be available to us. But for tonight...
Well, we had 3 pages left on the last chapter, and it did take us the whole time to get through the last chapter.
It did.
On the second go-around.
Really?
So, yeah.
Okay.
So it might take us the whole time to get through this... the last few pages of this chapter next time.
Well, we'll take a shot at it next week. I appreciate everybody's contribution. It's interesting that for me, knowing that you're there, for me personally, is meaningful.
Mm.
So thanks for coming. I look forward to seeing you next week. Wednesday at 7 again.
Yeah.
And we'll take up the part 2 of chapter 4. Thank you so much. Good night.
Thanks, David and MA, for leading our discussion this evening.
Thank you, Silverdale, for being there and helping out.
Okay. Thanks so much. We'll see you next
Good night,
week.
Susan.
Good night.